Well, welcome to Volume 3 of the Dropping Keys podcast. Yes, Volume 3 of conversations with real people living real lives to glean their insights and keys to life, leadership, love, and whatever else we get into. I'm Joel Morgan, your host, and I'm the head of key exploration. So why Dropping Keys? Well, in a few moments, you're going to hear me read a poem by Hafez, who's a 14th century mystic and poet. That is the inspiration for this podcast. Why me? Well, I'm a writer, I'm a coach, I'm a wisdom sharer, and I'm a seeker of keys to help myself and others live lives of meaning and purpose. Well, why real people and why real life? Just to be completely honest, I'm not attracted to the superstars of our time. I've heard enough from them. I've listened to plenty of other podcasts. I've read books. I've done all of that. And I've sort of gotten unenamored with that. I wanted to hear from people who are in the arena, who are giving their heart and their soul to work, to family, to community, to business, whatever it is they're trying to build or pull together. I wanted to hear from those people. And I didn't hear those voices out there, really. And I wanted to bring them, I wanted to have their voices amplified and bring them to you. And selfishly, very selfishly, I wanted an excuse to ask great questions and plumb the depths of what gives others life and releases them from the cages in which they find themselves. And so today, we're in for a great treat. We really are. My Dropping Keys co-conspirator is Joan with a big E, Justice, Joni Justice. She's a realtor, and she's just completed 3 years of leading an expansion team for a team here locally that just happens to be the number 3 team in all of Keller Williams International, which I believe is the largest real estate firm in the world. So just wrap your heads around that, people. That's just for a hot second. So you may not know her name, but she's in the arena for sure, really doing some awesome stuff. And here's the other part that I love about Joni is, she's a sculptor, she's a gardener, she's a world traveler, she's a live music lover, she tells amazing stories. But how would I describe her? Well, she may not agree with this description, but I'm going to use it anyway. To me, from the very first time I met her, she felt like this earth mother who puts people at ease and showers them with love and care, with this really amazing business mind back in the background that brings it all together. It's just this amazing collaboration that happens in this human being. And so, Joni, I'm so glad that you're here today for Volume 2. I'm so excited about what we're going to get into today.
Aw, wow. Thanks for the amazing description. So it's such an interesting thing to hear someone else describe you, right? I mean, we don't all get intros in life, you know, like when you walk into the room, here is, you know, and so that's really interesting. So thank you for that.
Maybe we'll talk later about whether you think that even has any basis in reality or just my mind.
No, but I think it does, actually. What I think is so interesting about it is just that you pick up the duality, you know, the ticker tape in the background of the business thing that kind of is and has been and always will be, sort of, but the essence of me is really my, the reason that I'm here, in truth, I believe, is really the way in which I make people, you know, allow people to feel. And I would say the greatest gift I have is that, I will say my best friend, Sherry, my soul sister, Sherry, says that she says, it's amazed me all these years that no matter what successes I have or what things have been going on in my life, I can always call you or I can always be with you, and I never feel judged and I always feel supported, regardless of what's going on in your life. So even if my life is not great, she never felt that I wouldn't genuinely celebrate her successes and also, you know, hold witness for her, you know, when she needed it. So to me, I think that's the greatest honor and sort of my gift.
Yeah. And I definitely have felt that, seen that, you know, the effect and the affect you have on people is always astounding to me. in just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful way. So, yeah. So I'm glad that resonated with you. So
yeah, it did. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I want to read, this Hafez poem, Dropping Keys. And then I'm just going to invite you to hear it. And I know you've read it a couple times, but just to hear it right now. And then I'm not going to say anything after I'm done. I'm just going to let you respond. Again, it's not necessarily a Rorschach test, but it's just right. whatever comes to mind for you. And we're sure. just going to let you riff on that. And then we're going to move into whatever we get into. So here's Dropping Keys. The small man builds cages for everyone he knows. While the sage, who has to duck his head when the moon is low, keeps dropping keys all night long for the beautiful, rowdy prisoners.
I love the imagery in this piece. And I love I think one of the things that's so powerful about it is that it's evocative in its simplicity, and it is flowering and huge at the same time, right? So it's amazing that in so few words, sort of similar to song and comedy, I'll sort of not directly quote Matthew Healy from the 1975. I heard a podcast with him where he drew a conclusion about the goal is that the comedian can penetrate with so few words in such a powerful way, and that the lyricist, if they accomplish that, have done something similar. They're probably the two art forms that are the most similar in that way. And so this poem, I think, is really representative of the sort of cliff notes to the War and Peace novel, right? You know, and it's so powerful. The imagery is just astounding. And what I found interesting was from the first word, I knew where it was going. I'm not familiar with it. I knew where it was going. And I could see myself in that journey completely.
Mm.
I could see myself as both characters.
Yeah. And
whether that is my internal journey or whether that's my external effect on my life and the life of those around me. So it's kind of interesting. I think that's what all true great art is, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It brings to life something that we already know, but we don't know how to express it. And,
right.
Or it gets expressed in a particular way because of that particular artist.
Right.
Right.
It's that, you know, it's that same chocolate cake recipe, but why does it taste different when each of the makers make it?
Yeah. Right? Yeah,
yeah.
One beats it five times more, or
right.
the water where one lives is a little different. Right, whatever it is,
whatever that is,
yeah.
And that's what's
so fascinating too. As that comes to me, is one of the things that often stops people from exposing their art, or you know, showing their art, or even pursuing art in whatever fashion it is. I love Seth Godin's thing about art, which is that we're sort of all artists because we're all making something, and we're all putting something out there. But anyway, but a lot of people don't do it because they're like, well, I don't have anything unique to say. Well, here's the fact of the matter is that it took like over 4 trillion things for you to be here in this moment in time, in this place right now. So you are unique. So whatever your voice is unique. So as long as you're not just stealing from one person and just re-saying what they said, but you're taking whatever and you're filtering it through you, it's unique. And somebody needs to hear it anyway. That's talking
absolutely.
Way too much, but yeah.
Well, it's hearing the same thing 100 times. And the 100th time is the one that really speaks to you. The same thing's been said, but it's been said by a multitude of different people in a multitude of different ways. and then the one time it rings true or through to you.
Yeah.
So it's all repeating themes, right? I think Chris Robinson from the Black Crowes said, we're all just writing our one stanza to the great big song, right?
Yeah. You know? Oh yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. I think that's good. Yeah.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. That's very good. Yeah. Well, so as you think about that, you said, I can see myself in this poem in all those ways. So when have you been the small person who was building cages for other people, people in boxes?
I think I certainly did that as a young person. I think part of that is done. The person who's building the cages is really building their own cage, right? They're trying to protect themselves. It's all about safety and control, and control is really about fear. I fear what you're going to do, so therefore, you know, stay in a familiar state for me. You know, so metaphorical box, you know, don't change your hairstyle. Don't, you know, change your style. Don't go to a restaurant you don't normally go to. Don't order food that isn't familiar to you, right? You know, I think the boxes, we create these boxes. Now, I did grow up in a family that was adventurous and really well-traveled, and so those weren't my boxes. But I think my boxes were about not letting you get close enough to hurt me. You know, my boxes were, I'm not going to be in a relationship. I'm not going to find a guy I want to be with because I don't want to lose control, because then I'm vulnerable and I don't love vulnerable. And therefore that's that. So I think those boxes were things. There were more the boxes I created for myself that then affected the others in my life, you know, than my necessarily forcing that on other people in my life. And some people do force it on other people, you know, when you look at sort of Puritan society, or you look at the, you know, the pilgrims, or the, you know, I mean, you can go all the way through the ages, all the way just next door, and see, you know, and see where we are now. You know, be this because this I understand, and this can, you know, be this thing because that I only do vanilla ice cream, or I only do, you know, whatever. And so I think we all do that. And I think our job, our mission, our soul's mission, is to really work our way through all of that and get to the other side, to be vulnerable, to embrace an open-heartedness for myself. I know that's my journey. I can be as empathetic. I'm hugely empathetic. It's, you know, on the strengths test, you know, empathy is number two for me. So, you know, I can be empathetic at a really deep, deep, profound level. And ironically, I've had the least empathy for myself. Right. You can give to others what you can't give to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, it is fascinating that we sometimes operate that way. Like, some of the most loving people I've ever known, when you talk about self-compassion, or you talk about self-love, they're just like, I how do you do that?
Yeah.
Can I do that? Is that allowable for me to do that? You know, that's like, they won't even give themselves permission, because that means it's somehow that they've done something that is against the pale of what they're supposed to do. It's a fascinating thing.
We glorify societally, you know, our culture definitely glorifies, you know, the empty tank, the person, the image of the person who does everything for everybody else, you know, and at their eulogy, they never did anything for themselves. They did everything for everybody else. They gave you everything. Well, they might still be here if they hadn't given you everything.
Good point. Right. You know, right. Right. Yeah. They wouldn't have stroked out at 65.
They wouldn't have stroked out or had a heart attack, or, you know, whatever, got diseased because they weren't honoring their own spirit. You know, they weren't taking care of themselves. And I'm saying this out loud to you to say it to myself, that the realization in the last year for me, as a being driven and detaching from my own body and my own self, and having that actual realization, was that what I was giving people. And the thing that we stated early on was my gift was waning because there was nothing in me to, I was on fumes to survive. And so the thing that people love about me or are, you know, experience from me that is the gift that I give them, I didn't have anything to give because my cup doesn't runneth over. It was empty. You know, you can just turn it upside down and it would rattle it. And so, yeah, that I think we have a culture that glorifies the thing that makes so much in our world difficult. You know, if you've got a bunch of people running around with empty cups, then you are selfish. Even if you're giving the last, you know, taking the hot dog out of your mouth and sticking it in somebody else's, there's an underlying resentment and anger and exhaustion and fear. And I think we, as a culture, in many ways, operate that way. And it's glorified. We just sort of got wired wrong somehow. And so I think so much of what the movement is now of being aware and, you know, the self-help revolution and just all of those things is learning the vocabulary of and the having permission to explore who you are and be kind to yourself first so that you can then be kind and be open to others.
Yeah. So how did that key drop for you when just in this latest realization of like, man, clearly I've created this cage where I just think I have to overwork, overproduce, right, overgive. And I've been super successful on that level, but now, how did that drop? Did somebody else notice that? Was it just like a revelation? Like what was that place?
It was an epiphany. It was really an epiphany. It was a moment of, so I am the picture taker, not the person who gets their picture taken, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't even had a whole lot of instances in my life where the camera was pointed at me. And it really wasn't about like, oh, don't take my picture. It just was like me always being the doer, right? So I'm always the picture taker. And I also am an amateur photographer. So I have a love of, but I also don't shoot people. I generally shoot nature and animals. So when I got into this position in my career, marketing is, you know, I work for a very large marketing-based firm who do amazing things, and you have to have your picture taken. So in 2017, when I accepted the position, to run the expansion team into Central Virginia for Sarah, I had to have my picture taken, right, in a certain way so that it could then be inserted in marketing and all of that kind of stuff, which is something I'd done a little bit with my own team previously, but wasn't big on that. And in fact, had never had my picture on my business cards. I had been sort of the anti-realtor in that way. I had a really cool artsy card, but it didn't have my picture on it, right? It didn't have my glamour shot or whatever. So I had that demarcation, right? I had that moment of, okay, I don't look on the outside the way I feel on the inside, and I need to get back into alignment. So that's 3 years ago, almost to this week. So last year, at the end of the year, in January of this year, we had our awards ceremony for the team, and we were having the team picture taken that day, and so we all wore black and did what we were supposed to do and all showed up and got our individual pictures taken, and then all the pictures were taken at the ceremony, and I was very fortunate to, you know, A, have had a really good year, and B, have been recognized a lot. So I was in a lot of photos, which I didn't think anything about per se, right? Like in the moment, that's not what I wasn't shifting and thinking I needed to whatever. I was interviewed after that by our head of marketing, who was filming video to do some projects. And I later saw that video. And so that was real me more than stills, right? So it was animated and it was, you know, it was a conversation like this and it was a snippet and it was edited into a bunch of other people on the team. And I just looked at that and I thought, all I could sense was how trapped in my body I was. Like, I was trapped in this casing that was literally someone else. And it didn't have anything to do with the way I looked necessarily. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm fat, you know, which, you know, it was a flag on the field. It was like, okay, nothing has really changed in 3 years. It's perhaps worse than it was 3 years ago. So there's that time elapse and that vacating myself. And that was the moment where I was like, oh, this could get dangerous. You know, this could be dis-ease. You know, this could be, you know, God forbid, you know, a stroke, a heart attack, or whatever, you know, like, it get real that, you know, what have I set myself up for by leaving myself?
Yeah, so. I think I find that so fascinating because it literally, you got a different perspective on yourself.
Yeah.
You were seeing it through the camera's eye.
Yeah.
Not through your own eye, not in when you put your, you know, take a shower, put your clothes on in the morning. Okay, yeah, it looks fine, go. You know, you completely different perspective, which then began, you saw something. Again, like you said, it wasn't necessarily, oh, I'm fat or I didn't have my makeup done right. There was a visceral recognition that my body has just been holding on to this, whatever's this maelstrom that's been going on, even with all this success and all of that. That's really amazing. So have you gone back to or latched on to any sort of new keys, as we want to use that theme, to begin to change that for yourself, even in the midst of having still having to build this team and continue to roll forward?
Yeah. So we had a team event that where we had a Gallup's Strength Finder coach come to our event, Anna Kruger, who's extraordinary. And she and I connected and I thought, four of my top five strengths are all strategic, which is really unusual. So I have empathy. And then the other four are strategic input, you know, and they're all thinking.
Yeah.
And I thought, I'm thinking myself into circles, and I clearly haven't thought myself out of this situation. So I hired her as a coach and have been working with her. And I got the Weight Watchers app and just started committing to that. And I committed to, she has really held me to not be the workaholic and to really schedule, to block time for me and not feel guilty about it and not have to apologize and not, you know, none of those things. So I started that journey at the end of February. So I'm just now into it, but that has helped. I think what it's helped is really sort of cleared the buzz of just perpetual motion, which is what I've ridden, you know, kind of like those rails of just perpetual. And so there's a buzz so I could ignore my own needs. Oh, I'm hungry. Well, I'm just going to finish this, you know, next three pages of contract or whatever. Or, oh, I, you know, need a break. Oh, I you know, I just need to do what, and I'm queen of working harder, not smarter, for a really smart woman. That doesn't make sense. And so I think putting people in my path who, you know, just go stop, is key for me until I can really relearn how to operate in the world without having to abandon something. So like without having to say, okay, I quit. I can't do this job anymore. I'm going to run off and, you know, just work at a coffee shop. And, you know, you're still taking you with you. And so that might have been an old pattern, but that's not the one for this time in my life. So learning how to capitalize on what I have built, not abandon what I have learned, not lose a skill set that that serves a lot of people and does serve a purpose in the world and helps fund a part of my life that really is my mission.
Yeah.
So it's that
chance. Right.
Right.
Yeah. And I love StrengthsFinder, and I've not gone down the certification route as a coach, but I've done deep dives, and I use StrengthsFinder with teams and all that. And what, and I'm sure you already know this, what we find is with some of those strengths is that, like for me, I'm a learner, mm-hmm. right?
It's in my top five too.
Okay. So yeah. I wondered, because a lot of times input people also are learners. Well, learners just like to learn. So it's not, it doesn't, if you just let it run rampant, you're just like, oh, I'll learn about that. And I'll learn about this. And I'll learn about this. And I'll learn about this. For an input person, I just need the inputs. Give me more input, because if I have more input, I can make a better decision, I think. Mm-hmm. And so then, right, like, oh, well, one more thing. I need to check one more comp to figure out, or I need to, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's fascinating. Yeah, our strengths are wonderful, but when we let them loose and don't strategically sort of figure out how they work in our lives, we can get messed up. So tell me about, or I'd love to hear more about the anti-realtor.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear a little bit more about the anti-realtor. I think it's a wonderful, you and I know each other. A bit, and probably actually pretty well. And I remember a conversation we had probably 3.5 years ago about blocking time, actually. So it's so funny that, I mean, we have a lesson to learn, and until we learn it, we're just going to keep trying to learn it. But that's another thing. I'm that all the time. But I love the anti-realtor. You know me, I've always been the anti, almost the anti whatever I am. Like, right. As a coach, I'm the anti-coach. Like, I'm not fluffy. I'm not a cheerleader.
Right.
I'm let's strip it down. Let's get real. Let's talk about what's really going on, and let's move forward. Not that I'm not positive or try to be inspirational, but you know, anyway, so tell me about the anti-realtor. Where did that come from? Cause in some ways it's a box that you put yourself in for good reason, but what was that all about, do you think?
Well, I think it was a box. I think it was, I didn't want to be put in with all the other people and sort of check myself against everybody else's standards. You know, did I have the card that looked like this? Was I, you know, belonging to this networking group? Was I doing this, you know, did I hit this milestone? You know, I didn't want any of that. And I approached real estate from a family place of investment and flipping and, you know, the artistic kind of and community empowerment kind of place was the thing about real estate that interested me and still does, you know. So that was the angle. You know, I didn't need to see other people's house. I wasn't Susie Sunshine. I wasn't like the great open house person. And I was never going to be, you know, I don't like small talk. It's painful. So commercial did really well for me, cause I was like, bottom line numbers, this has to fall in line and this works. Awesome. So I was kind of anti all the things that in a smaller market make you an official realtor, right? I just didn't do the right stuff, and it just wasn't ever going to come easy for me. So I sort of put that box together, and I just kind of worked my way through the people who wanted to work with me. and that and got referred and that kind of thing. So birds of a feather sort of was kind of how I ran my business until my previous business partner and I split up. And then I didn't really know what I was going to do. And then this, I had worked referrals for Sarah and Debbie, and this opportunity presented itself. What I would say is that that opportunity allowed me to have some realizations that, you know, I am a realtor, you know, and I do need to, you know, have my picture, you know, available. People do need to recognize you. Like, I had to fall in line with the team and what they had done to accomplish what they had accomplished. Like, I wasn't going to be the rebel I was the first year on the team. But it didn't serve anybody. And so I realized that that was a key that, you know, had to be dropped. You know, that was not something that was serving me or serving the people I had committed to serve, which, you know, was this team. So, as much as I liked the anti-realtor badge, you know, that was kind of a punk, but not in a good way. You know, it was kind of bratty more than it was, you know, and it certainly was not mature in serving of the mission. Right.
Yeah. And that's one of the questions that I love to ask people is like, yeah, what were some of the keys that you discarded because they didn't serve you anymore? And that one clearly, it felt like it served you because it was sort of like, I'm going to carve this out for me because I don't want to be put in the box with, and I'm going to get real stereotypical here. So people leave me alone, but you know, the perfect hairdo of the blonde realtor, mm-hmm. you know, on her card who weighs 135 pounds and, you know, doesn't eat, but anyway, right. that's, you know, but just looks perfect. And all of that, like, I get that right. sort of pushback against all that. Right. Sort of thing. But again, I love how you say, well, I came to this realization, like this wasn't serving anybody.
Yeah.
It was actually, you know, probably not good for if I was going to move forward. So that's right. good. What about other keys? Are there other things that you've discarded, things that worked for you at one time that don't work anymore?
Well, I think I'm in the process of discarding, you know, those things now. I think that I think I'm discarding the attachment to being different in a kind of I wear a medal of different kind of thing. You know, like I being the anti-realtor, being the I'm different, when in truth we're all the same in so many more ways than we are different. And so I don't need an attachment to that. And I don't need to be addicted to the cycle of overworking. And, you know, it really is like an addiction. And that addiction, all addiction is based on what I don't want to face, what I don't want to deal with. Right. And it, you know, if you asked me that, I would say, that's true about everybody else, but it's not true about me, right?
Yeah, absolutely, know? Absolutely. Right?
That doesn't apply to me.
No,
you know?
I am a special snowflake. Thank you.
I'm a special, right? Exactly, the special snowflake. That's it. So I think I'm in the process of really surrendering to the fact that I'm just. I need to let that constant frantic hamster wheel thing go, because it really, really isn't serving me. There are certain personality types it really does serve, you know. So, I work for one of the most driven driven individuals I've ever met. And that is entirely and wholly and genuinely how she is wired. I mean, those are the gifts God gave her. Like, she is in her lane. You know, she gets up every day. like Oprah and has her prayer and her moment of silence and checks in and, you know, runs her life with confidence in the gifts that she's got. And so she's, and being driven and being a visionary, you know, so she is a Bill Gates, a, you know, a Jobs, you know, she, a Mary Kay, a, you know, like a really driven individual, a Gary Keller, you know, she sits in a room with Gary Keller, you know, every month, you know, she talks to him, you know, and that's because he sees something in her. And so for me, working for someone and supporting someone who has that kind of drive, knowing how to do that without trying to adopt something that isn't me. And I think what I've done is try and be something I'm not, and that the cost, what I saw in those pictures, what I saw in that video earlier this year was that.
Mm. Yeah. So you talked about that. You like addiction is sort of based on what we don't want to face. Mm-hmm. So really personal, deep question is, so what do you think the overworking and all of that, what is it that you were trying to hide from that you weren't wanting to face?
I know that I didn't want to face face my vulnerability. I didn't want to face my sensitivity. And so if I sort of built this callus around me from, you know, running the rails, then nobody else could see that. And that I had made, I can see in retrospect as a young woman, made choices in love that were based out of having not done the work yet. Right. So many of us, you know, some people marry young and grow with their partner and continue to grow. But some people just choose the first thing that they need to work on. and they just, you know, get stuck there or, you know, end up, you know, splat. And then they don't want to. I think I had a combination of being enough of an introvert, truly, that I didn't mind being by myself in a lot of ways. So when I was with people, I was ready to be with people and give. And so people would never say I'm an introvert. Like nobody would ever describe me as that, right? Unless you were a really intuitive coach, you know, that kind of thing. But most people would say, you are no introvert, you know, but I am. And so I took that comfort level with myself and then took this wall that I could build of being successful at whatever I did. So when I waited tables and I bartended, I made the most money. You know, when I was an artist and I was making stuff, I sold lots of stuff. You know, like I just went to the, I can be the thing that you, I can get in this box and you will recognize that, you human over there, and you won't challenge me or try and really touch me. And so the choices that I made in my relationships early on, I made several, they were unsuccessful. And so I just closed the heart department down in a romantic way, right? I'm just not going down that road ever again. And so I think that also allowed me to vacate my body, right? Because I wasn't in touch with that. And so I think that there, you know, there just became this thing of being weaved together that happened. And that was really about, I don't want to try and figure out the relationship thing. I didn't like who I became when I was in a relationship with a man. So I just didn't want to do that. Right. So that's off the table. And then I don't like living hand to mouth. So I'm going to dive down, dig hard and, you know, make money, because that's what we do, right? If you make money and you have money, then you're successful and everything's okay, you know?
Right, and you're safe. Bond.
And you're safe, right? So yeah, I mean, that's really it.
Yeah. Well, so there's that, right? Hiding from this vulnerability and all of that. And then there's the Joni Justice that right? Goes to Bali.
Yeah.
There's this real spiritual side of you at different times in your life that you've described, and especially in terms of traveling. Yeah. And so where does that part of you go when this sort of thing is happening?
Vulnerable and open-hearted and empathetic profoundly with strangers and give you something and move on, right? So I think that's part of the travel, right? I can leave you with this sense of being understood, whatever culture I'm in, you know, being understood and being appreciated and loving where I am and communing with whomever or whatever, you know, nature, you know, when I'm there. And then I leave. So I never give people, I think what I've come to realize is that I've given a very few people, not never given anyone, but it's a really, really small group of people, access to give me those things.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. To be able to, but also to give them and to leave is much easier than to give them and to stay.
Right. Because if I stay, then I have to receive.
Right.
Right. If I'm giving, I'm in control.
Mm.
But if I'm receiving, I have to be open-hearted and vulnerable. And, you know, sometimes that's a win and sometimes it's a hurt.
Yeah. Right. Right. Well, because vulnerability, I mean, because you open yourself up to hurt.
Yeah.
I mean, to be vulnerable means someone can hurt you.
Yeah.
Because you've opened yourself up to them. So good. So good. Well, so what do you think? If you were to try to say for yourself out loud, what's the most important key in your life right now?
I think that the most important key in my life right now is that epiphany and the choices that I've made to support that blooming, that unfolding. That's it. When I get through this journey, this beginning of this journey, when I sort of really do enough, push-ups to be strong enough to, right, to go, okay, I'm not going to fall back into that trap, or I'm going to recognize when I am doing it. So what's the flag on the field? You know, who hurt me or what hurt me or what am I, you know, afraid of? So when I've done enough of those push-ups to know that, when I'm through it in that way, because I think, you know, we're an onion, right? We all can't, your soul comes in and it gets bruised on the outside and that bruise goes all the way to the center, but it gets lighter and lighter and lighter. So it becomes a less important thing in your world. You know, it becomes this long distant thing that you can reference like, oh, I was really hurt then. And that's the outside of the onion when it was, you know, a black side of it, you know, but all the way at the core, it's just this faded picture in a trunk, right? Mm-hmm. You know? And so I think that we go round and round. So when I reference that 3 years ago, I saw that picture at, you know, 3.5 years ago, I sat with you and talked about many of these same things. And 3 years ago, I saw that picture. And 3 years later, I have to say, I mean, I've accomplished so much and there's, and good. And, you know, the trip to Bali was a magic camp, you know, it was a coaching event. It was in, you know, with Corey Michelle. So it was an incredible thing. But I think that the thing that's important is realizing that I am not alone in this journey of embracing, and that it will come back around, so that my my trigger, if you will, is being vulnerable, mm-hmm. right? And so how do I set up the skill set? Just like somebody would, you know, provide, they'd go to AA meetings and they do whatever they have to not abuse themselves in that way. I have to set up the systems in my and people in my world who can, you know, say, hey, you know, you're back up on the computer until 2 a.m.
Mm.
And that's ugly. That's not helping you.
You're not
the best you.
Yeah. And who's that person in your life that you're sort of sending your daily record to?
Right.
Who you are allowing to gently say to you, you might be moving over into a, you know, not right. a good place for you.
Right. You've crossed the bridge, sister. So come back over.
And yeah.
So for me right now, that's Anna Krueger, and I'm immensely grateful to her and her skill set for that.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I'm completely biased in this. I would have not said this 8 years ago, but I'm completely biased in the fact that we all need people in our lives, and it helps to have professional people in our lives who we pay mm-hmm. to be those voices for us. Whether they're if you need a counselor, it's a counselor. If you need a coach, it's a coach. Sometimes people, we have friends that can function in that role, but generally I think our friends are too kind
right.
to us in some right. ways. I mean, not that coaches aren't kind and not that counselors aren't kind, but sometimes friends just, they don't want to say, you know, Joel, you're drinking too much or you're working too hard or is this phase you're going through, is this building, you know, the Joni that you want, or is this going somewhere else? And
right.
most people aren't there. So I think you've got to have those people in your life. And I keep, you know, that again, I beat that drum a lot. But most people, because I think of our American ethos of I'm going to do it myself. I shouldn't have to ask for help. Asking for help is weak, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know, I just think that's all baloney anyway. So, but yet I'm the person who has one of the hardest times really asking
right.
for help.
Asking for help, like we just do. I think an interesting thing to make note of is we're in the middle of this pandemic, and what we're all hearing and seeing, you know, all the memes and all the things that you're seeing and hearing is how much trouble people are having not being touched. Right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, people who are stuck with their kids and their spouses and can't get out of the house, you know, maybe don't want to, you know, but people, the contact, right?
Right.
The contact. And what I realized a couple of weeks ago, well, you know, I guess last week sometime, I really, really thought about it. And I thought, I'm a big hugger. Like people will say, like Joni gives great hugs. Like you give the best hugs. But I thought I haven't, you know, given anybody a hug or touched anybody in, you know, either in 6 weeks or, you know, whatever it's been, you know, a long time. But I'm less affected by that because I'm good at being on my own. And then I had this little voice in my head that thought, well, but you're so tired of that.
Mm.
You're so tired of that.
Yeah.
And is that really what you want to be good at? Like, oh, I can be isolated and be on my own. Is that really what I want to brag about or be, you know,
what a great question. Yeah. Yeah. Look at me.
Yeah.
I'm
so good at not being, you know.
I was great at not needing anybody.
Right, right. Needing anybody, you know. Right. I'm so good at that, you know.
Right. But I think that's the American dream in some ways, like because I think that's why so many of us at some point in time get enamored with these folks who have made it, right? Because we envision them as, well, now they don't need anybody. Most of them, I think, the ones that aren't just complete narcissists would say, I didn't get here on my own. Like, yeah. I have to have my team. I have to have these people around me. I have to have, or else I'm not able to even do anything of what I'm able to. I couldn't have built that without
right.
these 50 other people or whatever. But we often, I think we, I for sure over time had gotten into that mode where I was like, oh, well, it's just this person. And they just, for whatever reason, they work 90 hour weeks. And so they were able to make it happen. And I don't want to work 90 hour weeks. So I'll never make that kind of money, or I'll never be that successful, or I'll never be. So then that's a story you're telling yourself too.
Right.
So
it's another box.
Yeah. It is just fascinating to me. And that's what I love about this poem, is it helps me think through things like this. Like, where's the small man in me? And sometimes I think about the small man. I'm beginning to work through this poem as I'm working through it with people. For me, the small man is often our own ego.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely. Because the ego is always protecting itself. And the sage, it can be anybody, it can be anything, it can be a situation. It can be your version of God. It can be, whatever it is. I love that. So I'm going to ask you.
Sage can be yourself.
Oh, absolutely. No. I mean, your own insight, depending on if you can allow things to clear enough, because I think that's the thing. One of the things I've done off and on for 30 years is meditated, and more on than off. And there's something about, especially when, because I'm guilty of, well, I'll tell a little bit of my story. So growing up on a farm, we always worked. I mean, you were either working or sleeping or eating. You watched a couple hours of TV in the evening, or you were going to school. So you're always doing something. So it finally hit me a couple of years ago, and I called my mom and I say, I blame Dad. she says, what? She says, what are you talking about? I said, I blame Dad for the fact that I feel guilty if I'm not doing something. Because we always had something to do. And that meant that we were valuable. That meant, and I said, and in the life that I have now, I've got to stop and let the sand settle in the glass and be able to see things clearly. Because there's a lot of visionary work I've got to do. There's a lot of planning work. There's writing, all of those things. But I never equated those with work. I had to be doing something. I was a human doing, not a human being, as that old saying goes. But anyway, it's fascinating. Well, so a last question. So if you could just imagine, just people out there, and you were just gonna drop a key for people. What if you could drop one right now? What would that key be for others?
I would say the key I would drop for others would be to honor thyself first, and not thy ego. That's not it. It's the picture of the baby that is, sucking on their toes and looking at their fingers, and that study of, we learn to not love ourselves. We learn to not like ourselves. We learn to be us and others. We learn to be racist, if you will, or sexist, or those are all learned things. We do not come in that way. So I would drop keys for people not to lose themselves and have to find their way back, or less of us to lose ourselves. I mean, I think we lose ourselves, there's some sort of, again, badge of honor in the empty cup thing. And little kids don't let their cup get empty. They cry when they're hungry. They, they go to sleep when they need to go to sleep. Until we train them that they're missing something, and then they have a fit, instead of just honoring, like, oh, you're tired, just go lay down. It's okay. You're not going to miss anything. But instead we set in all these cues and really early on. And as you described, being a kid and having to be doing, you grow up on a farm, you are doing, you're out at the crack of dawn, feeding the critters and, whatever. And at night you're bringing them in and, all of those things. So I would wish for someone, and I would encourage someone to not have to unlearn.
Mm. Oh, I love it. That's great. That's really great. Well, I can't, Joni, I can't wait to go back and listen to this, because there's so much. You've told some great stories, and you've just been so open, and you've been super vulnerable here. And I really appreciate that, because that's, for me, that's what makes this work, is that we can just be open and honest with each other. And what I love about this genre is you and I have just been having a conversation, a real deep conversation. And now we're going to get to share this with people. And hopefully, I hope, my prayer is that something there might drop a key for somebody, and they might see something differently in themselves or in others, and really become who they are and who they need to be. So I'm just in awe of what you've shared today. So if you want to connect with Joni Justice, you can email her. She's allowing you to email her at sacredjourney2020@gmail.com. sacredjourney2020@gmail.com. You can learn more about me at joelmorgan.com. I'm at joelmorganCC on Facebook and Instagram if you wanna follow along. Thank you so much for being my Volume 3 Dropping Keys podcast co-conspirator.
Yeah, I love being a co-conspirator. So fun. Co-conspirator. So awesome.
I love it. Yeah, I do too. And so at the end, I say two things. And the first one is, may you be made whole, and may the sage drop the key to unlock the cage in which you find yourself. Mm. Thank you so much.
Oh, namaste, my friend. Thank you so much.